Public Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The signal you are receiving is coming from deep inside of FEMA Region 1. Well within the battle lines of the municipal corporation known as the Commonwealth of Taxachusetts, radiating out to the darkest corners of Al Gore's internet from our secret broadcast bunker, cleverly disguised as a middle-class living room. This is Red Pill Politics.
Patriots and socialist distancers. Welcome back. Weekly dose of Red Pill Politics. I am your opinionated host, Dave Kopasz, and it sure is mighty fine to have y'all on board this fine Saturday evening. It is July 31st, the last Saturday of July, and what a beautiful day it was here in the Northeast. Holy head rush, Batman. It was just a beautiful, perfect summer day. A lot of the humidity was gone, but the air is still pretty thick. There's a lot of moisture in the ground, a lot of moisture in the air. And, growing season is kind of tricky. We got plenty of water this year, but you folks better be careful. Lots of mold and mildew going to start out there this time of the year on your squash, things like that. All right, keep an eye on these things. Keep your stuff pruned nice and thin. Let some light and air through there. You're going to need it. It's been pretty damp. And you're going to need the food. You're going to need the food. Every single week in between shows, I keep hoping that I am going to read something, that I am going to learn something that will kind of take the edge off. Myself, personally, I have got great concern about food. Okay? Great, great concern. We may have some dire days in the not-too-distant future. Okay, so I hope your gardens do well. Right, as far as the timing and any hints that I have, I hope your garden does well this year. I've got a great guest lined up for the show. All right, I told you I was working on getting some interviews on here. I know I can get bloviating myself and just rant about all kinds of evils in the world. But what I like to do is bring you some of the folks that... you know, where the tires meet the road, and folks that have insight. Last week, we had a wonderful interview. It was actually part of a two-piece interview, because Saturday, as you remember, we had a wonderful guest on the show, 20-year veteran teacher, who was fired simply for asking questions about some of the perverse material that was showing up in the schools. And she was let go when she actually... you know, had a student she cared about, and she communicated directly with a parent, and I guess that's frowned upon in the re-education camps of today. All right, teachers aren't supposed to talk to parents. They're supposed to do as they're told, regurgitate the stuff they get at their workshops and whatever's handed out in the curriculums and workshops, and just shut up and behave, I guess. Well, this teacher was let go, and it caused quite a shitstorm here in the little old town of Ludlow. The next day, I had a parent on our live stream. We do a live stream version of Red Pill Politics on Sunday evenings from 7 to 9. And we had a dad who had a son who thought he might be a little girl, and a daughter who thought she may be a boy. The school district renamed the children inside the school district. It was sickening. Well, a whole bunch of parents are up in arms about this, and there's been a number of meetings, workshops, and educational get-togethers. Lawsuits are starting to fly, and all kinds of things are starting to happen. Well, this is all part of cultural Marxism, that constant march of communism. It has never gone away, all right, just because the wall came down back in the Reagan era. You know, communists didn't just poof, you know, dissolve into mist. They are still there. They're still marching forward. They laid out their plan. They got 10 planks and 45 goals that they made public. That is known. All right, we knew it was read into the congressional record back in the mid-60s. All right, it's still there. All right, I often, you know, make the parallel. This whole defund the police movement. They call it, you know, defund the police and police reform because calling it communist goal number 38 just doesn't sound quite as nice, does it? No, no, it doesn't. Well, all that stuff's at work. And I got a special guest interview for you tonight, independent filmmaker James Yeager, Matrix Productions. He's done a number of documentary films, including a film called Cultural Marxism. All right, he's talked about this at great lengths. He's gone over the Second Amendment with Molon Labe. I'm sure you've heard of that film. Right, in his most recent one on the Second Amendment, Good Guys with Guns. I was very honored to be asked to be part of that film. It was a collection of Second Amendment experts and advocates from around the country. They came together to remind we the people of this important right and that rights are asserted. Okay. He's done a documentary called Mainstream, where he exposed Hollyweird and the prostitutes and the mainstream media for what they really are. And I'll tell you, it's amazing. All this stuff is just all coming true. And you know, we're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to get James Yeager on, and we're going to pick his brain a little bit about, you know, back when he was originally thinking about these particular documentaries, you know, the planning that goes into it. And now that I've had an opportunity myself to, you know, see what goes into the planning and execution of a film like this, I got a great appreciation for how much work goes into it. Believe me, doing this little bit of media that I do, I can imagine taking on, you know, a premiere-length documentary as he's done numerous times. I think is just an amazing amount of work. But what I want to know is, you know, so much changes so fast. In a project like this, some of the information inevitably almost becomes obsolete, you know, out of time, because things happen so quickly. So I'm kind of curious, you know, when he was making these documentaries and trying to describe and convince the American public what was before them, how calculated it was, how well planned it was, if he ever thought that we would wind up here where we are today. You know, I mean, he's one of those that have been shouting from the rooftops, okay? And here we are, the apathetic Americans that we are. We're quite an entertainment-based bunch, I can tell you that. You know, we took our hands off the wheel, right? We're government, and we're here to help. And not only do they help, but they are now micromanaging every aspect of our life. Rights are being turned into revocable privileges. And many times we're begging for it. We're begging for it. This is a pattern that must reverse. We really do have to turn things around, rediscover that spirit of what it is to be a free American. You know, and if you have to go back, don't think it's going to be boring, dry, dull reading either, because it won't be. But go back and really try to find, if you can, while you still can, you might soon not even be able to access this information, but read about the battles, the intellectual exchanges between the founders at that time. You know, this whole nonsense about racism, that the country is founded in racism, is not true. It's not true. If you take it out of context and you go and pluck out selectively those little pieces that you would like to, you can, you know, just ask the mainstream prostitutes. You can tell any story you want. When you know, try to reconnect with the inner fire, the thirst for liberty that existed back then, when there was an exchange between political parties. At that time, there were parties in debates truly were over, you know, they believed it was the best way to maintain liberty, to achieve and to maintain freedom and liberty. Not what it is today. They just want to go in, they got pet projects and people they're paying off. They send all this money overseas. You know, they send $10 million over, $5 million comes back in campaign donations. You know, and not much of it goes to any tangible use to us, we the people. All right, so that's all they've done, is they got the Federal Reserve, hit the print button, you know, give it out around the world, and whoever gives it out gets a little bit of it back in the form of contributions, either right in directly into their campaigns or into all their nonprofits. If they ever do an actual legitimate audit of the Clinton Foundation, I think you're going to see people going right to jail. All right, this is a criminal syndicate. It literally is. So, you know, we've got to reconnect with that energy, because nothing less will save the Republic. The Republic is waffling, man. You know, you've been dealt a hell of a blow. I don't know if the people are going to be able to right the situation before major unrest for one reason or another breaks out. All right, it doesn't have to be part of a violent mob that just grows and gets out of control, and you know, it doesn't have to be that. It could start out as mere hunger. And like I said the other week, I honestly believe that the thing that'll bring people out into the streets in the numbers that is necessary for this type of reform is if your internet goes out, if you lose your Facebook, right? If you can't put a video on TikTok of your dinner, that's going to be it. That's going to push you over the edge. The hell with the fact that they're assaulting your children. All right, the hell with that. All right, they pick your pocket on a daily basis. They tax you and re-tax you and re-re-tax you. And spend it on what? How is it? Remember when, all these bailouts? We're bailing out all these banks. We were told that, you know, we've been printing money to the nations of the world. The central banks have been printing money. Loaning money, hand over fist, all around the world. And then turn around and everyone's crying poor mouth. We don't have any money. I mean, the common sense has to kick in at some point. Right? If the banks printed all this money and gave it out to all these nations, right, and all these nations are now poor, and the only ones that aren't poor are the bankers, well, that should tell you you got a problem with your banking system, right? All journal entries. Nothing but journal entries. And you're going to find out, this nation's been bankrupt for a while. We've been deficit spending for a long time. And these patterns, right? There was other documentaries that are, Gassi's going to be coming in very shortly. He talked about the Federal Reserve. He's interviewed G. Edward Griffin, right? Someone I hope to get on the show. I've interviewed him several times in the past, and he is the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, which is probably the go-to source for a very rich history on the Federal Reserve, its birth, who was involved, how it happened, the secretiveness involved, the sleight of hand. Right? Congress was away. It was Christmas vacation. And they slipped it up quietly, got just enough people to make quorum and vote it through, changed the name to protect the guilty. There's a lot that went on in the creation of that Federal Reserve. And that's the third time this nation has been saddled, plagued, with a central banking system that was nothing less than predatory. All right? And predatory is probably being nice. Parasitic is probably more like it. It's one that will weaken and weaken and weaken and eventually kill the host. But the World Economic Forum knows all about that. They're transitioning us right now into a cashless society. They're going to make sure that all of you have got your rations, is put on your chip. All right, they're trying to get that chip into you right now, probably. I don't know. I don't know what the hell is in that. That research serum that they're trying to inject into Americans with such a bloodthirst. That's not going well for them. The propaganda, when the propaganda goes up like you see, that means they are having problems. And boy, are they having problems right now. People are not buying it. They're not buying it. We'll see if enough people make it out into the streets to make a difference here. All right, that's going to be what tells all. You know, whether we succeed or fail as a free republic is not going to be anything that government does miraculous. Okay, it's going to be what we the people begin to assert and demand. Okay, what we assert and demand, because liberty and freedom, right, they are asserted. You don't apply for them. You don't make application. You don't beg for them. Rights are asserted. And if the people don't assert themselves, government will. There's no vacuums, you see, in politics. If you leave a vacuum of uncertainty, all right, if you operate through silent consent, government and its surrogates, the new Soviet, will fill that vacuum. They absolutely will not leave any void unfilled. We're seeing that now. So we're going to have a wonderful interview here coming up this evening. So if you've got the chance right now, if you're on Al Gore's internet, and you would like to hit the share button, let them know that we have got James Yeager, an independent filmmaker, from Matrix Productions, going to be coming on, and we are going to be talking it up. He's got a number of wonderful documentaries, and, you know, he's been doing this for years. We're going to talk to him about, you know, when he was making those. I know there's a lot of effort, a lot of time goes into it. I've engaged in projects where the material was obsolete by the time I got to the end. And, you know, to be able to do the research and produce the films that he has, and now to see us today at this date and time, because things really, they were bad back then. Obviously, it gave you know, he saw all the signals and why he made these films, but they have gotten so exponentially worse since then. We're in this post 9/11 era. We're now in the midst of the COVID 1984 fear porn theatrics. And boy, have we given up so much. And we're going to talk to him about that, maybe get a projection of what he sees in the future. Please share this out. Get people on board. If you like to, if you have any questions, we're going to probably open up the call-in line for the second half of the show, an hour or two. Also, if you would like to go over, we've got a channel. We got people up chatting right now. If you go to Twitch.tv and look up Red Pill Patriot. We are streaming there right now, and you can get in there and hang around the chat while we're broadcasting. And also, we got a break coming up. We're going to take this one.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
We are back. It is Saturday, July 31st, 2021, and we are about to embark on a wonderful, wonderful adventure of truth over several years. What has become a very good friend of mine, Mr. James Yeager. He's an independent filmmaker. He has been doing documentary films for a number of years now. And we are honored to have him on Red Pill Politics tonight. James, how are you, sir?
Great, David. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for carving out some time so late on a Saturday to join us. You're a wealth of information. You touched on a number of subjects. Before you came on, I warmed the audience up to several of them, but you really touched on a lot of the big ones here, everything from the Second Amendment, corporate fascism, original intent, and how the two parties have pretty much destroyed the politics here. And spoiler, how a third party could make all the difference. Cultural Marxism, mainstream. You exposed the press in Hollywood. Agenda 21. But right now in today's world, a question I've been dying to ask you on air is, after making all of these films in the time range that this is taken, this is an enormous amount of work this all represents, And so much changes so quickly in the political environment right now. When you were making those films, trying to sound the warning to people back then, did you ever think we would slide as quickly as we have into the current state of affairs and the threat that is upon the Republic right now?
Well, that's a great question. And one of the things that I always try to be careful about when I'm making the films is not put in any current politics. Because as you note, things change so fast that by the time you get the movie done, the current political situation has changed. So what we seek to do in the films, and if there's 10 of them, is explicate principles, philosophical principles that have gotten us to where we are. And just as I tuned in here, I came across something that says, a little thought for the day, that we have been gifted with a democracy, more specifically a republic by our founding fathers. The problem with democracies is they're all doomed to failure unless checked very carefully, because they're doomed to failure for as soon as the public realizes it can vote itself perks and special privileges, it will do so endlessly until the democracy grows so large it consumes itself. Mm-hmm. So I think the problem we're trying to fight is the overexpansion of the state, and that's being done by the left and the right. So that's what I've been kind of trying to focus on, is how to get us back to a limited republic.
Yeah, that nanny state stuff, paying people not to work right now, for example, is like an economic loser. I mean, I don't know how they could institute such things and expect it not to cause ripples in economic turmoil, but you know, that's just one small example and how extreme it's gotten, where they're paying people not to work, where they're paying farmers not to grow crops. I'm sure it's probably a wet blanket of that type of stuff right now.
Right. Well, that's the left. The left expands the state through the welfare system, endless welfare, the welfare state, as Ron Paul calls it. But the right is not guilt-free. The right also expands the state. It expands the state through the warfare system. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to remember, we spend between $500 and $700 billion a year on the military-industrial complex. So really, you have to take a critical look at the problem from a constitutional point of view. And the left and the right, the Democrats and the Republicans, are really just two sides of the same coin. One of them is Marxist and the other is fascist, in that it's corporate fascist because it's getting the corporations to basically buy up the Congress. And then the other side is run by Marxists, going communist. So we have totalitarian ideologies eating away at our republic from both the left and the right. That's why I feel that we really need to get a solution that's going to back us out of this.
Now, would you say that it is this spending habits, voting ourselves largesse, do you think that's more responsible for the rapid degrade, or something that we've been kind of hopped up on here lately is, you know, the focus on the kids? And this is nothing new. The focus is new. They've been after our kids for, you know, we're like 2.5 generations into this. But what do you think accelerated the degrade? Do you think it's the spending habits and what we've done to ourselves through regionalization and policy attacks on capitalism? Or was it the inculcation of the youth? Because we now have young policymakers who are public school victims when this nonsense started. But what do you attribute the rapid degrade as of late?
All right. I would say that if you're talking about academia and you're talking about the mainstream media, the two places where our kids get their learning from.
James, hold that thought. We got another quick break coming up. We'll be right back after that. It's Red Pill Politics, and we've got James Yeager, filmmaker, on for tonight. Stay with us. We're going into break.
You had tears in your eyes. You loved a man that kept telling you lies. It was hard to do, but it came down to you.
You You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, KosherTified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the KosherTified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Stuff coming to get you. High water everywhere. We are in high water, all right. We're in hot water is what we are. And we're going to be talking about it with filmmaker James Yeager is with us tonight. So hit that share button. Make sure you get your friends and peeps involved. We're going to open up a second hour here. We'll probably take a few calls and questions. If you like to play in text chat, feel free. Go to Twitch TV and look up Red Pill Patriot. They're over there hanging out in text chat right now. Be sure to go to republicbroadcasting.org website. You can get a full calendar of all the other programs that are going on. And please feel free to donate if you can. All right, this is listener supported. We can speak freely on this network, and that has value, especially in today's environment. James Yeager, thanks for sticking with us here tonight. We had to interrupt you there with a quick break. But please continue your thought, and then I want to get some of your ideas about what you think the future of media is going to be like.
Well, about four years ago, I interviewed Pat Buchanan and Ron Paul and Edwin Vieira and G. Edward Griffin in a movie called Cultural Marxism, The Corruption of America. And the basic idea behind cultural Marxism is this Marxist ideology has infiltrated the cultural institutions of the United States, academia, the mainstream media, the arts, literature, and so on, in what's called the Long March to the Institutions. Now, when economic and political Marxism failed, Leninist and Stalinist policies failed, a splinter group splintered off from the mainstream Marxists, and they figured out a way of taking over Western civilization by focusing on the cultural conquest. And this group of Marxist splinter group has been called the Frankfurt School. And these guys basically came up with a brilliant plan to basically indoctrinate the United States, the American way of life, and so on. But they knew it would take many years. Where we're at right now politically is always the function of what the philosophical leaders of about the last 100, it takes about 100 years for political philosophy to settle in. And the political philosophies that have taken over the United States, academia, and the mainstream media, are basically from Rousseau, Marx, and Auguste Comte. So I think the solution to get us back on track, get this Marxist ideology that's been infiltrated academia and the mainstream media dealt with, we have to kind of back out of it the way they infiltrated. We're not going to change the politics very easily right now, and we're not going to change the mainstream media very easily right now, even though Donald Trump is suing them, and that's a good idea. But my thought is we might be able to do something by dealing with academia first.
But what do you
mean by
back out?
Academia is where the kids get brainwashed.
What do you mean by back out of it?
Well, we've been indoctrinated in Marxist ideology for starting around 1913. We've been going into this progressive era where we've got nothing but more and more big government, the nanny state, the whole idea of the Marxist, you know, long march to the institution. So we have to back out of the way they indoctrinate us into Marxism. And they did that by basically going into academia. They went into the colleges, and they basically taught Marxist doctrine. It's, you know, Marxist doctrine, cultural Marxism. Another word for cultural Marxism is called political correctness.
Yeah. So should we go into the colleges and schools and expose and attack it for what it is? Or do we go into the universities and schools and propose a new doctrine?
Okay, in order to remember, the people that go into working in corporate America in the mainstream media, they come from the colleges. A lot of the studio and network executives came from Harvard and various of the Ivy League colleges. But all of the people that are in the colleges usually come from the public school system. So in short, what we have to do is we have to address the public school system, which feeds into the colleges. Colleges feed into the mainstream media, and the mainstream media feeds into the government. So we have to start with the public school system because that's the place where it's doable. The public school system is funded by the property taxes. Property taxes, the largest part of the property tax is the school tax. What we can do is we can cut off the school tax. We can then take control of the public school system, get the Marxism out of the public school system, and then those kids, when they go on to college, they're able to deal with the Marxist indoctrinated college professors that are currently flooding in academia. So that's what I mean by going into it basically the same way the Frankfurt School destroyed things. You have to reverse engineer it.
Yeah, sticking with the schools, you know, I've often said that we've got to face that there's a two-prong approach here that we've got to adopt, a long-term and a short-term. The reality is the schools are so broken, are so bad right now, that the type of reform that you and I are talking about that needs to be done is going to take years. It's going to take multiple election cycles to get the right people in those positions to begin disassembling, taking away all those layers of the onion. So there's that long-term, which we were just talking about, but the short-term reality for the children today, or the young parents that are going to have kids shortly going into the school districts, they're going to have to pull their kids out and homeschool them. And for that, I'm super excited, because there's just an amazing amount of energy right now, surges in homeschoolers pulling their kids. But not only that, the resources and curriculums these parents are pulling together is nothing less than impressive. I think we're looking at some sort of an educational revolution, and we're right on the crest of that wave, I believe, because it's all been going against us till now. But people who have peeked behind the curtains are seeing what you have done extensive research on, and they're shocked.
That's right.
Would you agree that there's got to be a two-prong approach, or do you think do you have faith that enough parents will withdraw their children so that we can begin those discussions on our town hall floor? I mean, they don't need to take three-quarters of our tax dollars if they've only got one quarter of the kids they used to, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. I do agree with the two-prong approach. We have to deal with the long-term and the short-term. But the way I think we can deal with the public schools is defund the public schools. I basically went to private school, public school, and homeschooled my kids. So I've had experience with the private schools, the public schools, and homeschooling. And these parents that homeschool their kids or send them to private school should not be paying school taxes. Basically, why should they be paying to educate the other kids in the neighborhood? They should demand a refund by the township for any money they've sent to them in property taxes. And then with this money, kids can then be homeschooled in private school, and they can be taught basically principles that are not Marxist. In this way, I think we can start to take back the government schools.
Yep. Now, I'm seeing parents coming together for the first time that I've never seen before. You know, that it's an exciting thing to see, and it's also frightening because there's a need. There's an immediate need for it. The reason that's causing this increase is what's most disturbing, but it's nice to see that light go off in a parent when they realize they're not the only one out there. Because this particular group of people, this community, if you will, is the best-kept secret. Most people don't realize that most parents with school-age children have no idea how many homeschoolers there are in their town, and they're in every town. And the schools don't brag about it. They certainly don't say, oh, hey, well, there's a group of parents over here that are homeschooling already. They don't direct you. They don't want you to leave. They realize that there's tethers to the purse strings. But how would you measure the impactfulness of the schools? I mean, this really is of profound significance in the overall plan, right? I mean, they couldn't really do what they're doing in the absence of focus on our children. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think they get them in the public schools and they indoctrinate them. They indoctrinate the kids into a blind acceptance of socialist, collectivist, big government ideologies. The kids are indoctrinated into this at an early age. Then they go on to college. They hit the college professors that will inevitably encounter them, and they're going to be Marxist indoctrinating. So I think the only way is to start when the kids are young, teach them a balanced history and political view, and by the time they get to college, they're inoculated.
Yeah. You know, I was very fortunate, I think, in the sequence and the way I went through things personally, is I graduated high school. My parents hounded me, you're not dropping out, you're graduating high school, if it's the last thing you do, and oh boy, they push. I got that high school diploma, and I said, there you go, get off my back, and I went out to work. And I spent 11 years out in the real world kicking my ass. Wound up, I had two sons in diapers. I was laid off, and I was in this loop where I work like a dog, you know, for 10 months out of the year, get laid off for 2 months out of the year, and never really grew out of that spot. It was getting monotonous. So I made the decision to, you know, really shake my life up a little bit. I went back to college after 11 years being out, and I did quite well. But I'm very thankful that I got to go out there, work, look at every paycheck and see how much the federal government took, how much the state government took, and how much, you know, taxes everywhere. I got to go out and be a grown-up and see what it was like. And it changed my perspective. When I got into college, you know, I survived. You know, I not only did I go to a pretty liberal community college to get my core stuff out of the way, but I finished my studies at UMass Amherst, of all places. And had I have gone in there right out of public schools, especially the way they are now, universities just finished gobbling these kids up. It's a scary place to be. I went back to my alma mater when my wife graduated. She took a similar path, and she went back to college and got her associates. And there wasn't an American flag to be found on the campus. I could not believe it. I was so uncomfortable on a very campus I had graduated from. It is not a good direction. We need change systemically. And, you know, speaking of higher ed, you know, I look at the economy and what's been done to that. I came from a family of machinists. My father, grandfather, aunt, and uncle, many of them worked in machine shops. Those all left with NAFTA and free trade agreements, and basically trades, you know, are nothing like what they used to be. You don't have metal shop and wood shop in high schools anymore. Do you think that's coming back? Is that part of the overall solution economically? Because this globalization stuff and is not working, I don't think.
Well, I think Trump made that abundantly clear that at least half the population is fed up with NAFTA, fed up with GATT, fed up with their jobs being exported to 50,000 factories exported to China. And I think that's one of the reasons Trump was put into power. I mean, he's a nationalist, not a globalist. So, yeah, I think this is a number one major serious thing. And of course, all the kids that, you know, are in the media and academia and the mainstream media and the government, they're all indoctrinated into globalization. You know, don't make anything in America. Let's ship it out to the Chinese. They're making all of our pharmaceuticals and all of our strategic semiconductors. So it's insane that what the globalists have done and how much control they've taken over the United States. And I totally agree with you. The idea of going to school and then taking a hiatus and going back to college at later years when you can better appreciate it and you have real-world experience and you've actually paid some taxes, I think that's, you know, the way to do it. And learning should be a lifelong thing. You should be in school your whole life.
Yeah. Well, you know, it wasn't even really the degree itself that gained me the employment and any monetary gains afterwards. It was almost exclusively extracurricular certifications and other things, trainings that I went to and I took up independently because, you know, they just fit the pieces of the puzzle. So there wasn't a lot about the degree itself that won the day for me. It was those add-ons. So, you know, going back again to my question about tradesmen, people with talent, electricians and carpenters and plumbers and mechanics, things like that. The agriculture. You know, I was talking in the beginning before you came on, James. I am convinced we're on the precipice of possibly one of the most severe food crises that many of us have seen in our lifetime. In our nation, as you were doing these documentaries, you must have noted that it was an agrarian economy that allowed us to settle and liberate ourselves in this nation. Maybe going back to our food being more locally secure would be a good idea and of economic value. Could we go back to an agrarian economy, do you think?
Well, the only reason we're spread out all over the world and sending good products all over the place is because we have this oil bonanza. But, you know, some say we're going to hit peak oil. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. But, yeah, I think we should get local. And right now the United Nations is trying to take over your local zoning laws. We did a film called Unsustainable, which your listeners can get at homevideo.net, if I may say that. We made 10 films, and they're all up as public services, and they're free. But at any rate, we have the United Nations basically infiltrating our zoning laws and dictating our farming practices. We have people giving up their farms to conservatorships, you know, similar to what Britney Spears is involved in, except for your farm. So,
yeah.
I don't know. A food shortage, I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, I mean, we've globalized our food to the point now where, you know, we raise, government factory chickens here in horrible conditions, put them on a tugboat to China where they're processed, put back on a boat and brought back here. And to me, that's a pretty expensive hunk of questionable chicken. You know, things used to we literally used to drive by a lot of our food. And right now, if anything breaks down, we saw this with the whole COVID thing. You know, we found out 99% of our antibiotics come from China.
I think people are going to wake up from this COVID thing. And also shipping those containers all over the place. I mean, a bug gets into those containers, a virus, and then we ship it to ports all over the world. It's totally insane. Globalization and the UN's program are insane.
You know, we got a big infestation here. It's been a big deal for several years here in Massachusetts of this beetle. It came in on pallet wood from China, and it was delivered into Worcester and kind of took hold. And, they don't know what to do right now. They got all kinds of prohibitions on the movement of wood in and out of the affected counties. So, yeah, those types of things do happen. You'll never really eliminate them, but you drastically reduce the chances and the incidents by just being more local. This is all a bad idea. This is globalization. I tell people this is the growing pains of globalization, all these little pinches that we're feeling, this UN stuff, they've got a chapter for almost every aspect of your life in that Agenda 21. People for years thought we were nothing but conspiracy theorists until, we came up with documents where they were crying out for this, connected all those dots, and here it is. It's in our local zoning bylaws at this point. You covered that quite well with the documentary that you did, Unsustainable, and pointed out a lot of important connections that many people didn't realize were even players in this. And even the entities themselves, so the land trust, don't realize that they're players in this.
Right, and speaking of conspiracy theories, many of us, or a number of us, posited in March of as early as March of 2020 that the SARS-CoV-2 virus was a product of gain of function. And we can now see, with Dr. Fauci being chewed out royally by Dr. Rand Paul, that wasn't such a far-fetched conspiracy theory, you know?
Right. Well, you know what else? And it's kind of funny. This is right out of Massachusetts again. And the silence here is deafening. I'm going to have a chance to speak at the State House on the 17th, and I'm going to bring this up because everywhere else it's censored. But I got to ask, when is anybody in the press going to remember last January, I think it was December or January, they arrested a department head in Harvard. He's the head of biological chemistry. His name was Charles Lieber. And the FBI had questioned him on whether he had any financial connections to China that he liked to share. And he said, oh, no. So they arrested him on the spot. They had already known that he was getting $50,000 a month for over a year. And he also got a big installment. And he had two lab assistants. Both of them were Chinese nationals. And one of them was in the Chinese military. The other was arrested at Logan Airport with 21 vials of biologicals that she was smuggling to China. Not just China, but Wuhan. Charles Lieber was working at a level 4 bio facility in Wuhan. And I am quite convinced that that gain-of-function funding, when they outlawed it, it was being funneled probably through someone like Lieber, who was already established over there. Well, you know, these arrests happened right at the climax of this whole thing. Now, as you pointed out, James, it's common knowledge. We're actually talking about this in hearings now, that this may have come from a lab. When are they going to go and at least do a wellness check on Charles Lieber before he suicides himself? I mean, this is pretty significant stuff, given that we're now able to talk about this.
Right. Well, gain of function is basically defined as a mutation that confers a new or enhanced activity on a protein. And basically, it's genetic engineering. And this started out basically in the first experiments were done at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Actually, the virus, the COVID, SARS-CoV-2 virus, was genetically engineered at the Erasmus Medical Center in the Netherlands in 2011. And it was basically presented to the European Scientific Working Group on Influenza. The experiment was soon reproduced in the United States in a lab in the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And so both the Netherlands and the U.S. experiments, all these experiments were reported in Science and Nature magazine. So there's no way it's just a conspiracy theory. It's on high-level record when and what genetic engineering experiments took place. So, you know, this has been known. The media has been hiding it. And it's basically what we have happening with the pandemic is we have Fukushima, Three Mile Island, all the nuclear disasters, when they happened, the whole funding was shut down for the nuclear industry. And that's why the scientists have been covering this up, because a lot of the funding comes from the NIH, and that's Fauci's organization and other government agencies, and they didn't want their funding shut down. But, you know, we've got four biological weapons conventions, and probably most of them are being violated right now by at least a sizable number of the 194 countries in the United Nations, by the 194 UN member nations. So this is really serious. We got to get a handle on who's experimenting with gain-of-function research.
For sure. We'll finish up on that. We got another quick break here, James. Stay with us. It's Red Pill Politics, and you're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
You're listening to...